Good morning. We thank you for tuning into our radio program today. This program is brought to you each Sunday morning by the Parkway Church of Christ here in Bowling Green. I want this morning to take a look at a subject that you may not think of initially as being a Bible subject or something that the Bible addresses. And those of you who are regular listeners of the program know that we are very careful. We not only claim that we have the responsibility to speak where the Bible speaks, but we also take it very seriously. And so, and always, regularly, issue the invitation that, and this is for help, that if you feel that we have misrepresented anything the Bible teaches, or not spoken where God speaks, or spoken where the Bible does not speak, that you would let us know so that we can make a correction on that. But this morning I want us to take a look at the subject of citizenship. Like I said, you might not think this to be a a Bible topic, but it really is. The Bible talks about countries, it talks about national ideologies, it talks about citizenship, it talks about all of these things, and I'm talking about the New Testament. You know, some of you may be thinking, well, yeah, if you go back into the Old Testament, you can find that really focused upon God working through nations and that type of thing, raising up one nation against another in battle against them and using them as a rod in his hand, as Isaiah 10 spoke of with Assyria, or a bird of prey from the east that would come and punish the Jews in the Babylonian captivity, things like that. But no, I'm actually talking about the New Testament. We're under the New Testament law, and I'm speaking of that. We'll be using those passages. And so I want us to think about this a little bit, because we're facing quite a problem here in the United States because of illegal immigration. And I've noticed that this has become a religious battle. A lot of churches have gotten involved in this, and there many churches have taken the position, what we call no borders position, where you just have the right of people based upon the fact that all are creatures of God to be able to cross over national borders illegally and do whatever they want to do because they are the offspring of God. And I understand the argument, but you're actually comparing apples and oranges with this. And you're pitting Bible passage against Bible passage. While on the one hand, all humans are equal as far as God is concerned. There are no ethnic divisions. There are no gender divisions, male or female. Galatians 3 and verse 28 talks about no Jew or Gentile, so no national or ethnic divisions. I agree on that point. However, there is another set of teaching that has to do with the concept of countries or provinces that are unique, who have their own laws, their own legal systems, their own citizenship requirements. It seems like all of those passages are being completely ignored. Then, of course, some of the most important things. When you have an open border, friends, we're beginning to see, and the reason this has become such a national discussion, and it needed to be a national discussion, is over the past few years, and during the reign of the Biden administration, there has been absolute open borders. And the problem with this is that now we're seeing that some countries have basically just opened their prisons. They have allowed just anyone to leave, and now we're allowing them, just anyone, to come into our country. And so now these very violent, very atrocious crimes are being committed. We recently, this past week, and this is what made me think about the subject. I'm just going to be honest about this. When a Venezuelan, illegal alien from Venezuela, attacks a young woman in Georgia, and the attack is so violent that he crushes her skull in the attack and kills her, that's when it's time to wake up. and talk about this and think about it. Now, I'm a preacher, so I'll be addressing this from a biblical perspective, but I will demonstrate to you that we can do that. That the Bible does actually teach the idea of national sovereignty, or of country sovereignty, or of city-state sovereignty. You know, a sovereignty. You see this actually in Acts chapter 12. Acts chapter 12, where you read about the conflict between the Roman government and the people of Tyre and Sidon. But the language of the verse is pretty interesting when it introduces the problem. Because verse 20, Acts chapter 12 and verse 20, because it acknowledges the distinction between the countries. It says, "Now Herod was very angry with the people of Tyre and Sidon, and they came to him as a group, having persuaded Blastus, the king's butler, and were asking for peace, since their food came from the king's country," or their country was nourished by the king's country, old King James. You have different countries mentioned here. You have the same thing in the book of 1 Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 16. It was interesting when I thought about a study on this. I thought of 1 Corinthians 16. I thought, you know, there are a couple of different countries mentioned in 1 Corinthians 16. And then it was rather interesting to me to scroll through and be reminded of 1 Corinthians 16 and see that actually there are five distinct countries or provinces that are mentioned, that are referenced in 1 Corinthians 16. For example, when Paul gave the instructions about giving upon the first day of every week in 1 Corinthians 16:2, he introduced that by saying, "As I have given order to the churches of Galatia," the country or the province of Galatia. And then you get down into the verse 3. "When I come, whomsoever you shall approve by your letters, them will I send to bring your liberality to Jerusalem." Where is that? Judea. There's a different country. You may recall, if those of you familiar with your New Testament Gospels, that in Luke's Gospel, in chapter 3, it goes through a list, the first couple of verses, of the various Roman rulers, governors, different degrees of of rulers, and their domains. And one of them was Judea. And Pontius Pilate was governor over Judea. You see what I'm talking about? They had their own rulers. They had their own laws. They had rules governing citizenship and things of that nature. But then you go on in 1 Corinthians 16 in verse 5. Paul talks about passing through Macedonia. Well, there's a different country. Macedonia. Philippi was the chief city of Macedonia. There's an epistle written by Paul to the Philippians. And then you keep going and you get down to verse 15, and Paul references the first converts at Achaia. He says the first fruits of Achaia. Corinth was the chief city of Achaia, right? And he's talking about Achaia here, more general than specific. He's talking about Achaia. Achaia was a different country, a different province. And then look at verse 19. "The churches of Asia salute you." Asia? Now we're talking about somewhere else. You know, there were, in the book of Revelation, chapters 2 and 3, seven churches of Asia addressed. These are different regions, different countries. And you might be thinking, well, Tim, you've made the point that the New Testament acknowledges that there can be different countries. But what about the idea of citizenship? Some religious people would say that's what they deny. By the way, this guy that atrociously killed this young woman down here in Georgia, I read was assisted by one of these religious organizations that believes that we ought to be helping as many people come over the border as we can. So they may be helping some good people who are hardworking, but they're also helping some people who are not. They're helping people who are not, and what is the problem? You see this band of of hoodlums that attack the police officers up in New York and just beat them while they're lying on the ground, on the street. And other examples, the recent rape that was committed by by an illegal alien of a 14-year-old girl. All of those things. And by the way, you can multiply these by magnitudes of numbers. They are happening all the time, everywhere across the country. Many are not being reported is one of the big problems. What is the problem here? Those people, friends, have not assimilated into our country. They have not assimilated under our laws. They have come here and they think they are a law to themselves. They think they have a right to do whatever they want to do. They feel no restraint. That's the problem with this system. That's the problem with illegal immigration. It's an ideological problem. You have people who are not assimilating, but rather they are coming in with expectations of being able to do whatever they want to do, including committing heinous crimes. So, again, does the New Testament say anything about citizenship? Paul, the Apostle Paul, acknowledged rights of citizenship. A couple of different times, in the New Testament, in Acts chapter 16, for one of the more notable of these. You remember that Paul and Silas were preaching at Philippi. And they got into trouble there, and they were beaten. They were beaten. And then later, you had the conversion of the Philippian jailer. And the jailer is able to argue on behalf of Paul and Barnabas. And you see this beginning in about verse 35. It says, "When the day came, the magistrates sent policemen, saying, 'Release those men.' The jailer reported those words to Paul. 'The magistrates have ordered your release. Now come out and go peaceably.' But Paul answered them." Now, I want you to notice what he does here. Paul asserts his rights as a Roman citizen. Citizenship afforded him certain rights. The beatings were unjustified. They were a violation of Roman law because Paul and Silas were Roman citizens. So Paul didn't take this too well. He said, "They've beaten us publicly, men who are Romans or Roman citizens, and have put us into prison. Will they come secretly to release us?" By the way, friends, this is a good lesson for us today. When the government orchestrates things that are wrong, when it does things that are wrong, even when it tries to hide them, there should be people like Christians, people like the Apostle Paul, people who are willing to open their mouths and speak up and expose that. That is after the model of the Apostle Paul. So I'm not afraid to do that. We have an example of a hero of faith doing it. It's what we call an approved apostolic example. Now, I realize that a lot of people call themselves Christians and say, "Well, I just don't think we're supposed to do that. I don't think we're supposed to get involved in that." Then they'll turn around and say we're supposed to follow the example of the Apostle Paul. Well, here's an example of the Apostle Paul. Why don't you follow this? Paul said, "No, I'm not going to do that." He said, "No, but let them come themselves and escort us out." So he made a big deal out of this. So the policemen reported these words to the magistrates, who became afraid when they heard that they were Romans, Roman citizens. They came to them and apologized and led them out. Now, friends, you might think, okay, now Paul is going to be more accommodative here after this. Because, after all, they apologized, right? So they apologized and they asked them to leave the city. We're not finished yet. I always thought this was a little bit funny. There are times in the Bible when some things are dead serious, but can also be a little humorous. They went from the prison. So what did Paul do? Did he leave the city? That's what they were supposed to do. They went from the prison to Lydia, saw the brothers, encouraged them, and departed. No, they didn't leave immediately. I thought the government asked them to do it. The government had no business doing that. The government had no business doing that and could not place those limits on the Apostle Paul. He had asserted his rights of Roman citizenry. And you see this again over in Acts chapter 22. You might think, well, that's just a some exception to the overall rule that really, you know, there's no such thing as citizenship. Oh, yes, there is. I don't see how you can argue against just reality. If you think about our country today, we're going to get into a passage that talks about why, the Bible reason, why we should pay taxes. Now, this passage is going to show us that we do not need to pay taxes for a lot of the things that we're paying taxes for today. But there are reasons for paying taxes. And so we'll get into that just here directly. But I have another citizenship passage. It was decided after the uproar in Jerusalem in Acts chapter 22 that the Romans had decided, you know, this Paul man is at the center of this. And people were shouting against him. And so it says in verse 25, as they stretched him out for the straps. Stretched him out. They're getting ready to whip him, to beat him. They stretched him out for the straps. Paul asked a centurion who was standing by, is it lawful for you to whip an unconvicted Roman? After the centurion heard this, he went to the chief captain and informed him, saying, what are you about to do? This man is a Roman. The chief captain came to him and said, tell me, are you a Roman? He replied, yes. The chief captain answered, I obtained this citizenship with a large sum of money. Paul replied, I was free born. I was Roman born. Paul was a natural Roman citizen. And he asserted this here in his own protection, his own defense. Now, not long after this, we find that he would have to do what? What else did he have the right to do as a Roman citizen? Appeal to Rome. Appeal to Caesar. He did. And the rest of the book of Acts is about that. If you're familiar with your New Testament, you know all about that. He's on ships. He's sailing. He's going various places and passing by certain islands and having shipwrecks and all of that. But he eventually makes it to Rome. Acts chapter 28, the last chapter of the book, ends on that note, and it ends talking about him spending time there in his own hired house, under house arrest. So, this is what we're talking about here. The rights of citizenship. The Bible teaches that. Now, why this idea of citizenship? And what about laws governing citizenship? Right now, that's what's under heated debate in our country, and has been for years. Some people are arguing, well, you know, you should have a border that allows people to come over whenever they want to and whoever wants to. Well, as a result of that, you've got tens of thousands of people dying of fentanyl and other drug problems. You have gang violence escalating at a never-before-known pace. We have murders and rapes being committed. It is not good. Why is that happening? Well, it's because of this right here. I'm about to read you. One of the aspects of the idea of nation or a country or a state, we sometimes think in the Bible of the various city-states, is governance, self-governance. There absolutely must be rules or a society will implode. And here's where Romans chapter 13 comes in. God has ordained something. He ordained the concept of civil authority. And, you know, even if you didn't have a New Testament, even if you didn't believe the New Testament, you would understand the importance of civil authority. That there needs to be some type of law. There has to be laws, and there must be some mechanism for the enforcement of those laws. We've been reading about policemen and magistrates and chief captains and governors as we've been going through this passage. We've read about all of them. And we'll see there's some other passages that talk about kings. So Paul is talking about civil authority. He has decreed this. But really what he decreed is this concept and the function of civil government. Now, this is an interesting text when we think about citizenship and illegal aliens. Because Paul is going to argue in verses 3 through 7 of Romans chapter 13. And I encourage you out there in the listening audience to read these verses. And let's look at this model of governance. What you're dealing with here, basically, is an ideology, an approach to society, an approach to a productive, for obtaining and maintaining a productive society. That's what you're reading about. Paul said rulers are not a threat, verse 3, to good works, but to the evil. Okay? So you have the concept of civil rulers being a threat to evil works, right? Should the citizens of a country be answerable to these things? That's the next thing we're about to read. Do you wish not to be afraid of the authority? Do that which is good, and you will have approval from it. He is God's servant to you for that which is good, but if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not carry the sword for nothing. He is God's servant to punish the evildoer in wrath. Sword is a symbol of death. The Bible talks about capital crimes. I want you to think about the next couple of verses. Therefore, it is necessary to submit not only because of wrath, but also because of conscience. This is why you pay taxes. Why, Paul? So that the government can provide salaries for illegal aliens? People who do not share my ideology, who have not contributed to the system, who have not funded the role of government, which includes providing for a fair and equal platform for people to be able to compete in economics and to be able to participate in the economic system. You see, here's our problem. What about for rewarding those who do what is evil? You ever think about how turned over, how upside down things are right now in our legal system? People who do what is right are often punished. People who do what is right are often punished, and those who do what is wrong are often rewarded. That's the exact opposite of what we just read in Romans 13, verses 3 and 4. Paul said, therefore, this is why you pay taxes, because they are God's ministers. Now, they're not God. They're God's servants. God's servants. So, that is in the sense that when they help those, praise those, or provide for those who do what is right, and they punish those who do what is evil, they are doing God's will. Because that's always the way God works. He rewards and blesses those who do what is right. There should be friends in government mechanisms, services, things to help those who do what is right. And then government should be set up so that it punishes and efficiently does so. You know, Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 11, see that sentence is carried out quickly in the land so that the hearts of men are not set on evil to do it continually. That is exactly the verse we need today. That's exactly the problem today. The hearts of the sons of men are set on evil to do it continually because sentence is not carried out quickly, speedily, the old King James says, in the land, right? That verse reflects the wisdom of God. And we understand how effective it is when you think of the nature of man. The tendency for people to do worse and worse things and more of it when they are not regulated, when they are not caught, when they are not punished. So that's in the Old Testament, but it's a principle that rings true for all of these generations. This principle is still true today. So we pay taxes so that the government can punish those who do what is evil and reward and praise those who do what is right. And Peter taught the same thing. And what we're building here, friends, is this idea of citizenship and the rights, Acts 22, rights and responsibilities of citizenship, Romans chapter 13. But I want to remind you of 1 Peter chapter 2. I always thought, though 1 Peter 2 is not quite as extensive, exhaustive as Romans 13 on this subject, the brevity of it actually helps us a little bit. In 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 13, Peter said, for the Lord's sake, for the Lord's sake. In other words, God wants certain things a certain way. For the Lord's sake, be subject to every human authority, whether to a king as supreme or governors as being sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good. What? No matter what type of government it is, it could be a monarchy. You could have a king. It could be a king and a kingdom, or it could be a representative republic. That form of democracy, not raw democracy, doesn't work very well. It's just mob rule. Can get to the point where it's just mob rule, I should say. But regardless of what type of government it is, here are the rules. It is to be for the praise of those who do what is good and for the punishment of those who do what is evil. So citizenship has some responsibilities. Paul added that you pay taxes for the purpose of upholding government performing these required tasks. To protect those who do what is right. To protect those who do what is right and to punish those who do what is wrong. It's so simple. And I mentioned ideology. Back years ago when I did a study of Islam, I used the Quran as my source book rather than just listening to what people say about it. And if you do that, you will quickly conclude that that Muslims who strictly follow the Quran cannot abide by, they cannot accept the U.S. Constitution. The two are mutually exclusive of one another. If you're going to follow the Quran as your religious guide and your societal guide, which, by the way, when you extract from the Quran your civil guidance, it's called Sharia. Sharia. Sharia law. Some Muslim Arabic countries have Sharia law. And that's where they got it. You get that from the Quran. And it is completely incompatible with the U.S. Constitution. And many of the basic rights, and you think particularly of the Bill of Rights, in the U.S. Constitution are based upon biblical principles. So the two are completely incompatible. That's why Muslims have not assimilated here in the United States. They have formed enclaves. But what does the Bible teach about citizenship? The Bible teaches, as far as a country that will please God. We read some of it in Romans 13, 1 Peter chapter 2. But what about over in Proverbs chapter 14, where it says, righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach unto any people. In verse 34, think about these principles. So, the reason illegal aliens won't fit, won't work, when they violate the law initially, and particularly when they continue to violate the law, is because they are not fitting in with the ideology of that country. And we need to think about this very strongly. That's why you have so much violence going on right now. But the Bible does address the subject. It's good for us to visit some of these passages and think about them and the principles that are contained in it. I'm out of time this morning. We will have to leave you today, but we hope you tune in next week. Until then, we bid you a pleasant good day.